Hello again. Welcome to the Doomer Optimism podcast. Today I have Scott from Thriving the Future podcast. I've known Scott a little bit through Twitter. I've also been on his podcast. And Scott, you seem to be into a lot of the same stuff that we're into. You seem to be really into both preparing for the future, an uncertain future, but also making the present as enjoyable as possible, both on an individual household level and on a community level. So let me start by asking you, one, to just to introduce yourself. What got you into kind of this resilience, homesteading, permaculture space? What got you kind of interested in moving in this direction?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on, Jason. It's good to talk with you again. So I'm Scott Miller. I have a Thrive in the Future podcast, thriveinthefuture.com, and on Twitter at Thrive in the Fute. So basically what we're about is designing your intentional life. There's a whole lot of voices, especially with the tough times going on in the world, right? We focus on homesteading, gardening, and then also community and building skills. So one of the things we've been working on is we had a lot of folks that were, oh yeah, we can't have a workshop on chickens. I'm not all that solid on it. So we have what we call not an expert, but we're still going to get stuff done workshops. Mm-hmm. Right. So we get together and we teach each other some skills. We share with new folks who maybe haven't processed chickens before, and then really focus on those kind of things, on skills and staying positive.
Okay. I want to get more into that, all the things you're doing, and also the kinds of guests you look for on podcasts. But what got you started? Tell me a little bit about your history. Was there a specific event or a certain book you read, or just how you grew up that got you interested in this track?
No, I lived in a townhouse in town, and then my friend was a prepper, started asking me some questions. There were some protests in downtown Kansas City, and it was like, you know, how do you get out of here if something happens? They sent us home early because there were protests going on and stuff. So we started having those conversations. My wife has had horses and she boarded them. So we got a 10 acres here in Northeast Kansas. And we've been on here for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. So back in how the podcast started, back in COVID land, back in actually we're right at 2 years now, a little bit more than 100 episodes. We were going to workshops or events or whatever. I met my friend David, whose nickname is Perpend, over at the farmer's market. And on our way to events, then we were having conversations about community and you know, what is really the what makes good community, and what is a community, and things like that, and skills, and concentrating. You know, you always hear two is one and one is none and all that stuff, and there's a lot of folks that gather you know, supplies, but they don't necessarily practice with them and things like that. So we decided at that point that we were going to start turning on the recorder while we were having our conversations. And then that became the podcast. And we didn't say the word COVID for a whole year. Mm-hmm. Part of it was to keep from getting canceled. And the other part was to make sure that, you know, we just had other things to concentrate on. One of the things you saw was some of the podcasts we listened to were obsolete in 2 weeks or so because their predictions were either, you know, just over the top, or they weren't over the top enough. So you could go back and listen to episode 1 or through 10 or whatever. And there's that applies just the same today as it did in 2021.
Yeah. Okay. And the name itself, Thrive in the Future, I know that you were influenced by the book Surviving the Future. Do you want to talk a little bit about that influence and how, you know, thriving the future is a you know, it's a more positive, obviously, kind of take on that. It's like we don't just want to survive, we want to thrive. But do you want to talk about that, about that book and kind of your own twist on it?
Sure. So I read Surviving the Future by David Fleming and Sean, and was really impressed about not only did it focus everything down locally, which seemed very, you know, counter to the overall message you usually hear around those kind of things. And then also the focus on culture and getting back to that kind of community, right? Where you're sharing things, you're having shared experiences, the whole idea of Slack time. And it overlapped with, I also read a lot of John Michael Greer and those type of books as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you mentioned that, so you have a podcast, you have a newsletter. I know you feature certain people that I'm familiar with in kind of our joint networks. How is this project evolved, and how do you see it evolving in the future?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it started as just myself and Perpin, and we were having conversations every week. And then as we were going along, Perpin decided that he wanted to have more intentional community. And so he became Orthodox Christian, and moved to Kansas City, and then got closer to the church there, and then ended up going on the monastic path. And right now he's at the monastery. He may come back. He may not come back. Who knows? So he's on the monk path. So that kind of threw a wrench in the works about eight months in, because all of a sudden all of our episode, we never had any guests or anything. And then all of a sudden he's leaving. And so I repurposed and rebooted it basically to have conversations with people like yourself that I saw a tweet that was intriguing. So I said, hey, let's talk about it. And Ashley, and lately what I've been doing is focusing on things I want to learn more about, or skills that I want to learn more. Like this week, I have Carrie from Strong Roots Resources, and we're talking about how he went from urban homesteading to building a permaculture consulting business. So he's got areas around Kentucky, and he just consults with people's land if they're buying raw land or whatever. And he's turned it into a gig. So I thought that was pretty cool. So I decided to talk to him.
It seems like you're just kind of letting things evolve, and whatever kind of catches your interest, you're kind of just going for that. That's cool. Let's talk a little bit about your own kind of setup. Like, what are you developing on your homestead, and what kind of community events are you developing? You talked about these workshops of, you don't need to be an expert to these workshops. Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about kind of just everything you're involved with locally.
Sure. So I have 10 acres in Northeast Kansas. Mm-hmm. We have two horses, a donkey, something like 20 chickens, I think. And then a whole lot of gardens. I just extended my garden and food forest out by 80 feet a couple of years ago. And I hand dug the swales using a broad fork, and just double dug down, and then took the dirt and turned it into mounds. That was the only way that I could get apples and chestnuts to grow, since I didn't have any irrigation back there. So it was unfortunately quite a ways away from the water. So I did that, and that's been pretty successful. And then also,
for the sake of the audience, do you want to talk a little bit about the kind of what a swale is and the purpose of a swale?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. So the idea is to have basically a ditch on contour. So I take an A-frame, which is made out of wood, and then it has a plumb bob on it. I figure out where the lines of contour are on the hill, right? And this challenge in this place was that it was going in two directions. It's going downhill one way and downhill the other way too. So it was interesting. I stuck some stakes in the ground and then broad forked it out. And then it collects water when it rains. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's interesting about Northeast Kansas, we don't have April showers bring May flowers. We have all of our rain, for the most part, comes in May and June. Mm-hmm. So it's important to catch that at that point, because it's usually in big thunderstorms as well, right? And then there's a lot of drought in between. And like this time of year, it'll start getting really long periods without any rain. So that slows down my water, helps it absorb into the mounds. And I have really heavy clay soil. So having the mounds give the trees a head start, instead of just sticking them in the, if I just put them straight into clay soil, then they tend to get root bound. They can't tend to just go around like they're in a pot or something.
Yeah.
And they never kind of infiltrate that. So those two things have really helped. I made a lot of mistakes really early on with, I heard stun method. This is the way to go, you know, sheer total utter neglect. Well, that doesn't work for grafted apples because they have to be irrigated. So this has worked out pretty well. I have a bunch of apples back there that I haven't really irrigated, and the swales have helped a lot.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. I feel like the stun method is also pretty expensive. Unless you can get a really good source of, say, grafted apple trees, that'll add up to just play it by the numbers. So that's interesting. So there's a lot of periods of drought, and you don't really have to do any irrigation. I mean, this is, I think, you know, for a lot of areas, this is that a lot of people don't know this, that how you manage water, how you catch and store water, how big of a difference it can make. You know, especially areas that are particularly dry, there just doesn't seem to be as much knowledge on this as there should be. I know that like Andrew Millison in his videos is like doing some amazing videos in India and other places where they're transforming villages with water. I don't know. Do you have any other thoughts on like just the importance of water in the landscape and how to catch it and manage it?
Yeah, and that's really important because I have behind my barn what I call the back 40, even though it's not 40, is I put trees back there and they don't do well at all. So I don't do any other water catchment besides that. I do have rain barrels on some of the downspouts and things. And then I use that. I've got some IBC totes. I need to do some more with rain catchment as well.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. So I kind of interrupted you asking about the swales. You want to continue on? So you said you're expanding your gardens. You expanded your gardens 80 feet. You've been planting these trees. You have some livestock. Do you want to continue along those lines?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things that I have really been excited about the last couple of years is that I went down. My friend, I tell this story all the time. My friend planted some chestnut trees down at the elementary school in a small town around here, and he thought, I'll let those grow out. Then we'll have chestnuts roasting by the open fire. I'll do a demo for the kids. It'll be great. And the principal put an end to that. So the chestnut trees are still down there and nobody really does anything with them. So I just go down there and collect a bucket at a time. And then little by little, I started sprouting those out. I put them in sand over the wintertime. I tried soil, but they were rotting. So I put them in sand in buckets in the wintertime. And then I take them out in about April. And they'll be all sprouted out. I'll put them in tree pots and I plant some, I trade some. And then this year I've been selling them both locally. And also I've got an online store, grownuttrees.com. So it's been pretty successful. And then next week on the podcast, I have on October 29th, I have an episode on how to start a nursery side hustle. So, yeah. And Grant Payne, who's on the podcast quite a bit, and he's a young guy that has been doing a lot with those, starting a nursery. That's his little side gig. We talk a lot about nut trees and then figs and things like that.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, there seems to be, like here, the only place you can get any nut trees, and mainly only chestnut and hazelnuts, is from like the county extension, and it's okay. It's an okay source, but in order to get any other kinds of nut trees here, I have to order online, long distance. And it seems like, yeah, that seems like something that if I put my, you know, my mind to it, that would be something that I ought to develop, right? Just because there's a fruit tree nursery about an hour away, but there's no nut tree nurseries around. And that seems to be nut trees in particular, in terms of like food security in the long term seem to be pretty valuable. What are some of the elements that you would recommend for starting a kind of a nursery side hustle? Like, what, I mean, I can imagine you need some kind of like, do you need like a greenhouse, or like what do you actually need to like be able to sell, you know, saplings, I guess. Are you selling saplings or
just seedlings? Yeah. So basically what I do is I just go down and collect the chestnuts. I put them, so I get 2 gallon buckets, you know, they're like half of the 5 gallon buckets. Mm-hmm. I drill holes in the bottom. I put in sand and then layer them out, put a lid on them, and I just put them in my garage for the winter time. I'll leave the chestnuts in the refrigerator. So I just collected them like last week. I'll leave them in the refrigerator till December, and then I'll move them to the buckets. I take them from the buckets after they sprout out in April, mm-hmm. and I'll put them either a whole bunch of them in 5 gallon buckets, or I'll put them in tree pots, mm-hmm. and then I'll transplant them as needed. But that's it. That's all I do. And then I just leave them outside, mm-hmm. And water them occasionally. Some of them have done better in areas where they don't get the afternoon super sun. So I have them in a place that has a little bit of shade in the afternoon, and that seems to work really well.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's low maintenance, low overhead.
Yeah.
And, you know, pretty big return. And the thing that really stands out is what you said is that, you know, there's nobody around you that has nut trees for right. sale. I've bought things from Twisted Tree Farm up in upstate New York. I've bought from Michigan and from the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. And Twisted Tree is not too bad, but for the most part, they just don't do well in Kansas because seeds have a memory. They thrived and they remember and thrived where they were successful, right? So I get seeds from the Pacific Northwest and they just fail miserably. So even if I get them sprouted out, they don't thrive once I get them in the ground. So this one, I make it special for the Midwest, and then they work on my land. So, you know, they work on, they're going to be more likely to work in the Midwest.
Nice. Okay. So you're focusing up for nut trees on chestnuts. Are there any other nut trees that you're thinking of growing?
Yeah. So hazelnuts. Mm-hmm. And then, so I sprout out Jefferson hazelnuts, same type of thing. And then elderberry has been real popular lately. And I have apple guilds in my garden, and I planted elderberry along the south side, and mm-hmm. the elderberry outperforms the apple. So I have to vigorously prune it back every year. So I've got cuttings and I don't even try very hard. I stick them in the ground and they take off, and I've got elderberry everywhere. So, you know, I do a little bit of that. Elderberry's really been popular lately. I've made a lot of transactions with elderberry. So
yeah, it's interesting with elderberry. I ordered some a couple of years ago from a nursery, I think in Oregon. They haven't done well. And then this last summer, I just found some along our riverbank, mm-hmm. pretty abundant, and they're just thriving, just kind of on their own. And I was just like, okay, well, I've definitely got to transplant a bunch of those, both along the riverbank themselves and then try and bring them up. So that might be, I've never tried to like, you know, propagate things yet, but that might be my first foray into that. We'll see.
Yeah. If you go there like February or March or something, and then cut you know, the year growth or whatever, and then just take them and stick them in the ground. Sometimes I put them in pots, but then if they're in pots, I have, because of the way that the weather works, I have trouble transplanting them when they're ready to go from pots to the ground. So I just stick them in the ground and they've taken off. I've got elderberry all over the place. Yeah. So haven't had too much luck growing it from seed, but you mm-hmm. know, for the most part, cuttings have been pretty good.
Tell me more about the workshops that you're doing. So you mentioned chicken processing workshop. How did those get started? Are there other workshops that you've done or you're thinking about doing as well?
Sure. We went and looked at one of our community members, our friend's land, and he was saying, what can I do with this? And we went and walked through it, did a little bit of soil testing, kind of gave all of our opinions on what he could do with it. And it was interesting because it was kind of narrow, about 3 acres. And by the time you take into account the easement and all that other stuff, that would really limited him. So it was good feedback for him. And this is a good thing about going and what you could do from like a permaculture or a land consulting gig, like we were talking about this week, is that, you know, so Carrie, the guest, he does it in Kentucky, but, you know, he's pretty local. So you could do both that and the nut tree gig or, you know, whatever could, the key is to do it local and everything local, because the seeds have a memory. You're making relationships with folks. Right. And, so yeah, we did that as a workshop. We went and we've done several chicken workshops. We went and taught a bunch of people how to process the chickens as well.
You also, I think I remember you said that you also hunt and fish. Is that kind of part of the whole mix? Do you want to talk about what you like to hunt and how that goes?
Sure. Yeah. So it's right now it's Kansas deer season, and I've been out a few times. So I usually get one or two deer a year, and then I'm always at the ready because my friend will call me and say, "Hey, I just got a deer. Will you come and help me find it? Or will you come and help me pull it out of the woods?" It's always way, way back in the woods. And then if I pull it out, then he'll give it to me. I hung it up and looked up on the internet how to process a deer. And then I processed it myself, you know? Cool. So that was pretty cool. And I've been doing that for a few years now. Okay. So we have in Kansas, we have crossbow. So our archery season includes crossbow. So it's pretty much like, you know, not too much different than gun. So I don't have to do the full draw or anything. I just, I'm just sitting there, you know. So.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit more about this idea of thriving in the future. And it seems to be like there's crossover in the world between, say, homesteading and prepping, although I see them as somewhat different. And it seems like what you'd like to talk about is beyond just prepping. It's actually kind of trying to create the kind of, you know, community that you want to see in the world, so to speak. Do you want to talk about kind of like the mindset of prepping and the crossovers with kind of how you view what you're doing, and like where are the crossovers and where might be some of the differences in terms of these worlds?
Sure. Yeah. And I think it's a worldview, right? So, you know, there's this Venn diagram between homesteading and prepping. And one of the things that we did early on was, so we've got a Telegram community, and everybody wants to post memes, and they all want to post other stuff. And, you know, that invariably will go down the, you know, whatever, some, the outrage of the day. Right. And so we said, look, why don't you just post what your solutions are? What have you done? You know, so then we'll have folks that are sharing. Grant shared, he found a bunch of figs and trimmed them down and things like that. So it actually put off some people because they're like, "Oh, I can't share my meme. You're censoring me," and stuff like that. Right. And it's like, no, it's just that all those other groups are like that. Let's talk about what we're actually doing. And instead of what somebody else is doing or whatever else, it's, you know, what are you doing and things. And because there's a lot of folks that are sharing stuff on social media and they get that dopamine hit, but then they don't do anything. And then it's like, you know, so what are you doing? You know, outrage of the day is posted. So what are you doing about it? I'm waking people up. Well, no, you're not, you know, you know. If you believe that that's happening, then you probably want to do something about it to get yourself in a better place, either prepping or getting a homestead or something like that. Let's talk about some positive solutions to deal with what you're talking about rather than, you know, the outrage of the day. Right. And that's been the focus, and it's difficult for people to get their head around it, but, you know, and then a couple of weeks ago, we had that. So October 4th, there was that big emergency management you know, warning thing, right? So the phones went off at 2 o'clock in the afternoon saying this is a test of the emergency management system and everything else. And the, you know, the usual boards were a buzz and Twitter was a buzz with all this stuff that, oh, it's going to activate this stuff and it's going to do this. And I'm just like, you know, did you guys learn nothing from COVID? You know, and I could say for myself, right? So I was well prepped. And but then when we got sent home from work, and things started going south, it was like, you know, I still went to the store. Why did I go to the store? Part of it was to watch it burn down, you know, watch everything go crazy. And part of it was because of anxiety. So it's like, you know, if I was truly prepped, was I mentally and spiritually prepared, right? I don't think so. And a lot of folks that I know in the circles that I know, they weren't either. And, you know, it's like, hey, I should have just been chilling at home, watching it all happen. Shouldn't have been a big deal, right? At least that first couple weeks. Yeah. And so, you know, that's one of the lessons that, so it goes beyond just the, I'm growing a garden. It goes beyond, I'm planting some trees and stuff. And then it goes beyond prepping or, you know, or storing some food. It's also going towards what's your mindset, what's your, we had Cyprian on and he was talking about what's your eschaton, what's your view of the end times, that is you know, not necessarily from the religious point of view, but what's your view of the apocalypse, and then what's that you know, because the apocalypse means unveiling or whatever, what's your view of it and how is that driving your mindset and your worldview?
Yeah. Okay.
Deep stuff, sorry, but you know.
Oh yeah, no, this is
and
good.
it was like, you know, so 2 weeks ago when that happened, I was like, are we doing this again? You know, you guys, I thought you guys were more prepared, and I thought you were more prepared mentally this time, and you're freaking out over a thing coming on your phone. So right. You know, and stuff. Yeah. It was kind of funny.
Yeah, to your point, I find it it's a lot easier. Like, a lot of people have, you know, kind of dark pictures of where the future is heading, but oftentimes they disagree, or they're very different. They have a very different emphasis, or they directly contradict each other. And it's a lot easier to agree on, like you said, what are you actually doing? Like, how are you making your life better, your family's life better, your community's life better? Like, those things aren't based on, you know, what kind of news feed do you have going on every day of, like, who's telling you what? Like, that's actually something that you can see with your eyes that, hey, things are getting better. It seems like it's a lot more of a unifying factor besides just being based in fear and reaction. It seems like, you know, it's something that, okay, nobody can deny that you plant some apple trees, it looks beautiful, and it's, you know, adds value to your life. It's not something that people are going to argue about online. It makes sense that, you know, focusing on the positive would be more effective, even if it is coming from a perfect mentality, it's just more effective in sure. trying to accomplish that. Yeah. Okay. Another kind of philosophical. Hold on, Cleo. Another philosophical issue that comes up is this notion of self-sufficiency. Do you think self-sufficiency is a useful concept, or is it, let's say, a household level, or is it more about becoming more resilient? Is it a spectrum? Is it more about community sufficiency and interdependence? How do you see this issue? Because there's a lot of argument over this, and it seems like oftentimes the terms just aren't clarified very well. I'm curious what you think.
Sure, and the whole thing is not. Am I self-sufficient so nothing will happen to me? It's, you know, so that I have the peace of mind and so that, and everything else. So this is a perfect story. So a couple of years ago, we had a community event where a bunch of us got together with our friend who's got a apple press, right? One of those old time apple presses, and it's got the grinder, and then you press it out. It's a small one. Mm-hmm. So we all took took our apples over and we helped pick apples at his place and we made some cider. And it was great. And this is the kind of thing that builds community. A bunch of us came away from that and immediately said, I got to buy one for myself. Right. But why are we buying one for ourselves when we have, you know, we've just proved that we can do this in a community.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of folks that are building their, you know, are still stuck on the prepper compound. Yeah. You know, and I've got to be prepared. And, you know, one of the things that we really need is to have that small local community, the community where you can fall back on folks that, hey, you know, I use this example a lot. I can't grow squash. The squash bugs just descend. They destroy everything. And then, but my friend maybe can grow squash, so I can trade something like chestnuts or something with him. Right. And then that, not just from a transactional level, but it, you know, it's got to go beyond self-sufficiency, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And if I'm being honest with myself, I don't think self-sufficiency is even really possible in the sense that I would never need to bring in materials from outside of my property or... Sure. I would never need help with anything. Yeah, that seems to be a healthier, like what are the assets and capabilities of your community and what can you do individually to provide some basic capabilities for yourself, you know, and some assets for yourself, but really I think thinking at a community scale is much more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It seems like, especially the bunker mentality, it seems like it's either you have to be extremely wealthy moving into it or you're going to get burned out pretty quickly. If you feel right. like you have to provide everything about your life within your own, you know, within your own bunker, so to speak, it just seems like, I don't know. It seems to me it would be an unhealthy approach to it versus I think what you're describing of, okay, maybe not every single person in this community needs an apple press, right? Right. Every single person needs to grow squash. Another aspect of it for me is it's not just what you're doing or what you're growing, but it's what skills are you acquiring, right? And that's really where people can help each other out. You know, I like this term kind of minimum viable, kind of like broad-based minimum viable skills where mm-hmm. might not be the best carpenter, I might not be the best plumber, I might not be the best gardener, but you know, if I know a little bit about each, I can kind of like get by, you know, and you know, when it's available, get help from others who have more skills in that way and learn those skills. And so it's about assets, but it's also about skills. And you want to talk about kind of the skill side of it and how you think about developing capacities for yourself, but also a community developing capacities, and what are some ways that a community can do that?
Sure. So yeah, one of the things I really liked about Surviving the Future was, and I'm paraphrasing a quote from there, that eventually it gets to the point where not enough taxes can be taken in to help everybody. And we're going to have to turn back to local and start fixing our own problems. It's going to be hard at first. Now I'm really paraphrasing that, but basically that was the meaning of the paragraph. And that was just so, you know, shocking. It's like, yeah, that's, and then taking it and getting that culture around it where like the event with the apple press, we're going to press apples. We're going to drink cider and we're going to drink cider from last year too. So we're pulling out cider that has been fermented for a year. And just that whole thing builds community.
Mm-hmm.
But also the skills. Cause you know, two is one, the big prepper thing is two is one and one is none. Right. So I buy a generator. Did I check that generator out? Did I learn how to use the generator? Or, you know, I bought a generator and if I didn't test it, I would have had a surprise when the ice storm came, because I turned it on, or I tried to start it, and it just started shooting gas out of the carburetor.
That would have been a,
and you know, when you really look at the, when you look at the directions for it, a lot of them say you have to run them for 5 to 10 hours and then change the oil and do all this stuff before you even put a load on it. Most people don't practice that. So it's like, you know, do I have gas for my generator that's current? Have I learned the skills around it? Do I have the extension? I got these flat extension cords that go underneath the door, right? Stuff like that is just those little things. Did I pull it out of the garage so I'm not gassing myself out? Did I pull it back far enough? You know, I practiced that not too long ago, and it's, you know, things like that are fungible skills. They just, you know, it's like, how do I do this again? Do I have to mix in? Is this the one that has the 2-in-1 gas, or is this the one that's got the standalone gas? And it took me a few minutes to figure it out, right? And then, and if I didn't pull it out and try it, then it would have, and it takes forever to get those RMA'd because you can't take them back. You have to contact the company and then get an RMA and then take it back to Bass Pro or Cabela's or whatever. So, I mean, it took months to get the RMA. And so it was, all that was good lesson learned that I didn't want to learn in the middle of a ice storm.
Right. Okay. Let's talk more about, so we've talked a lot about local community, building up local community capacity and local sufficiency. What about this network you're building, right? So you're interviewing a lot of people that, you know, have interesting sets of skills. They live all over the place, I imagine. We're also kind of doing the same thing. So we're also kind of building this network. What do you see as the value of this network? And I mean, for me, you know, this is one thing that's kind of different than the past, right? Like in some ways we're trying to build a lot of the skills from our ancestors who, you know, knew how to live more locally, but we have the internet connection, what we're doing right now. And this seems to give us one, it'll help us overcome the challenges from forgetting many of these skills that we took them for granted with modernity. So it'll help us kind of bridge that gap. But do you, like, what do you see kind of like, I guess the larger picture, what is the value of building up these broad geographic networks?
Well, I think it's really good in the fact that it even teaches me new skills. Like the whole thing about putting the chestnuts in a bucket in sand, and then the whole sprouting mechanism, I wouldn't have known that unless I had, you know, external influences on that. I mean, I put the chestnuts in a bucket and I put it in soil and they all rotted and, you know, turned into mush. So being able to do that, I've had lots of conversations with Homestead Padre, who's been on your podcast as well. So, and then we'll share recipes. I buy a hot sauce from him. He's got this flaming mango hot sauce that's amazing. So, and then, and a lot of it is, as long as you don't depend too much nationally on the network, always try and get it to the point, you know, there's folks, like I live about an hour from Kansas City. I can meet up with some people that are not, you know, all on the East Coast, but you know, I've got some folks that you can arrange a meetup. That's a real important thing, or even a periodic or seasonal meetup. Mm-hmm. You know, go down to Oklahoma or whatever and meet up with some folks and do a regional meetup or a workshop or something like that. So that's what I want to do a little bit more of in the next couple of years as well.
Okay. So anything else that you want to discuss with regards to kind of what you have going on? Any questions I didn't ask?
No, that's pretty good. That's pretty comprehensive. So it's a lot of it is I'm to the point where after 100 episodes, I talk to the people. I see tweets that I find intriguing, and it allows me to break the ice with other people. And then we've been having community calls on Zoom with our thriving community. And then we'll get together and talk about some topic like what's your biggest challenge you have going on right now? And then we'll share our experience. We'll share our advice. We'll have some laughs. It's great fun.
Nice. Nice. All right. Well, for the Doomer Optimism audience, I would suggest that the Thriving the Future community is a sibling podcast. I was wondering whether I should say sister podcast or brother podcast or something, but we both have had similar guests on and are interested in similar topics. So I would definitely encourage our audience to check you guys out. It's not just the podcast. It's also, you put out the newsletter. You also have guest writers as well. I've been seeing guest writers. That's really cool. So I'm guessing if for people who have something interesting going on and would like to write about it, is that that's a platform that, you know, they could reach out to you and see if it's a good fit?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Cool. Yeah. So we've got a Thrive in the Future, thriveinthefuture.com. It's on on your fave podcast app. You know, Matt DeRozier always makes fun of me because on Twitter, I say, listen on your fave podcast app and stuff. And then the newsletter is thriver.news. So what we were seeing is, by putting long form articles on the regular website, people were not really seeing them because it's basically about the podcast. So we started a newsletter site called thriver.news. You can also get it to it from thrivernews.com, but that's where we have our longer form articles. And then we hope to get some more folks involved with the writing as well. So I have articles on there on how I extended my food forest, how I do apple guilds. I have a full article on how I sprout out chestnuts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's pretty, it's a nice, it's a different way of interacting as well.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm always curious when I talk to people, do you have, in terms of your own land, do you have kind of like a 10-year or 20-year vision? Because I know, like, even when you plant trees, you already have to start thinking in terms of decades, just because of how long they take to grow. What's your vision for, like, say the next 10 years for your property? Like, what are the big kind of projects you're looking to get involved with?
Sure. The big thing is I don't like mowing. We have a like quarter mile, a little bit more than a quarter mile driveway, and I don't like mowing up and down the driveway. So I'm putting gardens up and down the driveway. I'm planting hazelnut and more trees up and down there, and just extend more of the food forest. It's funny how much I can plan all I want, but then a year or two later, it has a completely different vibe to it at that point, right? The things that thrive surprise me. The things that fail surprise me. And then the deer will figure out some way to get over the fence and chew down the chestnuts or the persimmons or whatever else. So, you know, it's one of the things that I've really been working on is milpa. So I go and I'll take the broad fork. I'll turn over some sod. I'll throw a little bit of compost on it, and then I'll just mix a bunch of seed together, and it basically has squash, corn, and beans, and then everything else like okra and whatever else I have laying around. And I'll just broadcast it out, throw some wood chips over the top of it, and let that grow up, get some nutrients going, and get some mulch going, and then scythe it down for the wintertime. And that's the way I build some of my newer garden beds instead of, you know, doing a whole lot of hauling things in.
Yeah.
I'm also starting to, instead of just having one perennial area and one annual area, I started mixing them together. So I'll plant plantain and hazelnuts. And then I started planting black seeded Simpson lettuce in between them, the annuals. And then that seemed to help a lot more. And I know when I do get success with squash, it's usually in a situation like that milpa where the squash is hidden in a bunch of other things like buckwheat or whatever. And then the squash bugs aren't really bothering it. So I'll get farther in the cycle and sometimes get some squash out of it. So, you know, that's been helping a lot.
Okay. Cool. Anything in regards to livestock? You said you had 20 chickens. Did you, you said chickens, you had a goat, a couple horses?
Yes, we don't have goats. We have a donkey and we have two horses. The horses are kind of elderly. My wife wants to get a little bit more into donkeys when they get a little older. So, we've hatched out some chickens with our roosters, and then grew the flock that way the last couple of years. So instead of buying chicks, we've been mostly hatching them out. So that's been going pretty well. And then, so it's always a new adventure. We built a greenhouse out of discarded windows. Nice. And so that was really neat. And it's just sticking more plants in the ground and seeing what makes it.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, I think we've covered most things that I had in mind to talk about. Anything else that you can think of that would be interesting to discuss?
So what are your big plans that you have for both the winter and for next season?
Let's see. Right now I'm just kind of thinking about putting everything to bed. I'm thinking about mulching all my trees. I've been mulching all my trees, getting, for my garden, I tend to apply heavy mulch to the garden over the winter as well. So I'm just kind of in the process of that. We just processed some meat chickens a couple weeks ago. I'm thinking about maybe building a second chicken tractor and expanding. Maybe I bought 25. We ended up with 22, maybe going for 50 next year. So I might build another tractor this winter. We'll see. The next few years, I really want to get sheep probably. But in order to do that, I need to get a lot of fencing because there's a lot of area that would need to be fenced. So I'm kind of trying to figure out, okay, how am I going to get the financing together to do that? So that's kind of my, one or two year goals. And then once I can get the sheep, and I don't have to think about haying the field anymore, because they would be good lawnmowers as well. So I rotated them. Then I want to start planting a mixture of nut trees throughout the main field area. That's kind of just grassland right now. I've planted a lot of like chestnuts and hazelnuts, but I want to branch out into I want to try some exotic things like butternut and heartnut and maybe some pecan, and looking at various sources that might be compatible here. So I guess besides maybe building a chicken tractor, that's kind of the main, larger scale, like this is the direction I want to go envision. I'm also started some black locust seedlings. I'm starting some black locust seedlings, and I want to plant a bunch of black locust in the spring, just because I want to get a woodlot going. I don't have like a natural woodlot here, so I'd like to be able to harvest wood for burning in about 10 years, and also have fence posts and things like that. So yeah, that's basically where we're at right now.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, we've got a lot of hedge trees, and I thought about getting some locust, but my wife's worried that they'll send shoots out and get in the pasture and stuff. I planted two snowberry blackberries in the back behind the barn a couple of years ago, and they were just tiny little plants, and they've taken over everything. And I tried to dig them up, and that just made them mad. And then they spread worse. So now I'm gonna have to get aggressive in over the winter time and figure out how to get that patch out of there. So, but she said absolutely no loaded locust, but.
Yeah.
I've got some hedge trees in process. I've got some hedge apples that I picked up that are soaking, and we'll see if I can get some seed out of them.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. My plan is basically just to mow over where they're not supposed to be around the trees every year or something. Yeah, it is. It unmanaged, it can definitely get out of control. But yeah, I mean the fact that they're just so fast growing is the biggest draw. Like everything is like a chestnut. It's like, okay, in 10 or 15 years, it's going to be great. You got to predict them until then. But yeah, getting a few more kind of fast growers in there is kind of exciting. All right. Cool. Well, it's been nice talking to you, Scott. Nice to have you on, and I'm a fan of what you're doing and how you're growing this project. And I wish it all the best.
Great.
And
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
I'm sure we'll be talking more in the future and running into each other. So until then, take care.
Great. Thanks, Jason.
Cool. Bye.